You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. So I am recording this episode basically off the back of procrastination because I am currently writing my third book. So the GEA, Leaner, Stronger, Faster, which I'm hoping will be out before Christmas. My second book, very much aimed at GEA players. It's going to be a strength and conditioning, nutrition, sports nutrition book. But my third book that I've already began working on, I'm about 45,000 words in now, is a follow-up to the fitness mindset. So the mindset section particularly, I'm expanding on and really fleshing out. So I'm writing that currently, and just one of these days that I couldn't feel the flow effectively. Sometimes I write and I could be writing for hours and you kind of fall into that flow state. Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi has a great book on the flow state. It's effectively when you lose track of time. It happens a lot when I speak. It happens sometimes in training, and it would happen to a lot of people when you're in a good conversation with somebody where you're talking for 2 hours and you're like, oh my God, that felt like 10 minutes. That's kind of your flow state. So I'm not really dropping into that today. So I'm going to record a podcast instead. I've been getting questions in and I'm going to jump all over in today's podcast with a range of different ones just because we've been very focused on guests over the last few episodes. I've had some incredible people on the podcast. So if you haven't been listening, I've had people from ultra marathon runners to people that have traveled all over the world, to business tycoons, to fitness competitors, to Ironman, to drug dealers, in the case of John Joseph. So there's been a range of everything over the last month and a half or so. So any feedback as well would be great. I really appreciate any time anyone hits me up on DM on Instagram or leaves a review and just lets me know what they think of the new direction. It's been very, very positive because of the mindset element that a lot of the guests are able to bring and the range of expertise that and qualities that they have. So I hope you're enjoying the new format. Today's Q&A is going to be a little bit of a longer one, I think. Again, I don't know because I don't plan out any of the podcasts beforehand. Somebody asked me recently on the mental health episode. I actually may get into that a little bit today in one of the questions. But when I recorded the episode on dealing with mental health, which is something I've struggled with myself, mental health, not mental illness, they're not the same thing. Mental health is anxiety, stress, worry, like something you can control. You just haven't put the plan in place or the strategies in place to do it right now. Mental illness is different. That's a chemical imbalance in your brain, or there's been something wrong in your polymorphism in your gene that there's an issue with your illness. Like I like to think of mental health a little bit like your physical health. Your physical health is in your control. You know, if you're overweight or out of shape, you can control that by eating better and exercising. But if you've got cancer or you've got an illness, assuming that you haven't taken any preventative measures, that's an illness. That's something that's wrong with your body. Mental health is very, very similar. It's not the same thing. So when I talk on mental health, I feel in a place that I can talk on it from a personal experience, but mental illness is a different thing, so I generally don't touch on that. So yeah, as you can tell, today's, I'm just going to jump back and forth today because I probably had too much coffee. It's probably why I can't concentrate with the book writing. So yeah, I'm going to get into the first question and I'm going to jump around today and hopefully be able to provide a lot of value. I haven't done one of these in ages, so hope you enjoy it. So first question came in from Instagram stories. As a non-runner, how do you motivate yourself to put in the miles? So if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I'm not a natural runner. And I say that very loosely because I actually hate running. And yes, I have ran through 6 back-to-back marathons in the Sahara Desert. I'm preparing to run through the Arctic Circle, 230 kilometers in February. But I actually hate running. And one of the reasons, and this is fresh in my mind because I was writing a section on this in the book yesterday about building self-discipline, that self-discipline is like a muscle that you build over time. You're not born with self-discipline. And the more you do things that you don't want to do, even though you know you have to do them, you strengthen that muscle. And that can be learned. One of the reasons that I get very passionate when I talk about things like self-discipline and getting up early and doing things you don't want to do is because I was on the opposite end of that spectrum. I was the person that looked at people that could run 100 miles or looked at people who could do bodybuilding shows or just looked at people in shape or with a lot of money and thought I could never do what they could do, not realizing that all the difference, the only difference between them and me was effectively that they had either better habits built in that have compounded over time, or they've developed the self-discipline to do the things they have to do whether they feel like it or not. And when I was able to reshape that and realize that that's learned, that you're not born with that, you build that, my whole life started to change over the last several years, because you build up that discipline by consistently leaning into things that make you uncomfortable. And one of the things I talked about in the book is I've got three pillars of self-discipline that I use. And one of them is getting up early, because I fucking hate getting up early. Like, I hate mornings. It takes me 20 minutes just to even know my own name. But the reason I get up at, you know, 5 a.m. every morning is because I hate getting up early. My body doesn't like it, and I don't think anybody does, if I'm honest. Some people are better with mornings than others, but I get up early because it sets up my day and gives me a psychological edge. And one of the things I talked about in the book, and I've spoken on the podcast regularly, is just get up an hour earlier. It doesn't matter what your relative time is, but if you get up at 7, experiment with getting up at 6. If you get up at 6, experiment with getting up at 5. That extra hour in the morning can reduce your anxiety and stress throughout the entire day. And I never made the connection between my stress levels and anxiety ramped through the roof and setting 5 alarms. I call them 5 alarmers. I'm a fucking 5 alarmer. Where I would set 5 alarms so I could hit snooze 4 times. And again, now it's ridiculous because I understand the cortisol spike, and actually spiking cortisol 5 times in the morning is probably the worst way to set up your day. But it also puts you into this kind of negative state when you wake up, because you're feeling a bit groggy, you're feeling a bit tired, your cortisol has been elevated 4 times already, because every time that alarm goes off, your stress hormone cortisol spikes to the roof, and your cortisol are already elevated in the morning. And you're going through your day. For me, I would set those 5 alarms. I would get up, I would rush through my breakfast, and then I would jump on the tube when I was in London, or jump in my car if I was working. And I never made the connection that my anxiety was so high because I was literally starting my day like that. And when you own the morning, you can own the day. It's something else that I'm exploring in the book. Whether it makes it in the final edit, I don't know. But when you own the morning, you set up your entire day. And getting up that extra hour earlier, on top of working as a foundational pillar for psychologically being stronger, it also allows you to just clear your mind. So I experiment with a couple of different things. What I like generally is my recovery strategy. So in my GA Lean Body program, and in my BKF online program actually, and my new Top 50, which I was supposed to launch in November this month, but it will be effectively, it'll be January before that's launched. And the recovery strategy in there is a mixture of foam rolling. I use the Pulse Roll, which is a vibrating foam roller. It's probably my favorite one. And trigger point tension therapy with a slitter or a hard ball, and a form of either some light yoga or stretching. But effectively, I just take that recovery strategy and do that in the morning. And then I'll do my gratitude journal. I also journal in a book called The Daily Stoic Journal. So Ryan Holiday, who wrote The Obstacle is the Way and Ego is the Enemy, two incredible books, particularly The Obstacle is the Way. It's one of my favorites. It's a book that introduced me to Stoic philosophy and Stoicism in general, that there's nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And The Obstacle is the Way basically tells you about that every obstacle, or the obstacle is the way, that every obstacle that you come and meet is the way. That we think obstacles are a bad thing, and they're not. They're actually amazing. They actually are the way, because in order to get over an obstacle, you have to put in effort. And in order to get over an obstacle, you need to be stronger, or you need to think in a different way. And every time you get past that obstacle, you add a psychological leg to your confidence table, and you build your life around that. And he has a book that is The Daily Stoic Journal. So I journal in that. It's something that has really helped me over the last 6 months or so since I've started implementing it, because I can't speak for everybody, but for me, I can get very caught up in the day-to-day and caught up in my own world where you're focused on book writing, on recording a podcast, on doing an interview, on checking in with clients, on checking in with your team. And I can get very, very wrapped up in the day-to-day. And I find that a book like the Daily Stoic Journal, which generally is a prompt of a question like, what are you doing today that you didn't prioritize? Or what is wisdom to you? These kind of nearly metaphysical, esoteric questions that just get you out of your head for a minute and make you think of the bigger picture. And I just write. Generally, it's 2-3 minutes. I'll just start writing my morning thoughts in that on whatever the question is that prompted it. And it just kind of gets me out of that constant reactive mode of, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that. And you're checking off a to-do list before you've done anything. And that's my personality type. And as I said, I can't speak for everybody else, but you're your own best example. And I tend to be very type A, go, 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 always thinking, always doing. And sometimes just taking a step back and thinking of a broader question can, this is a really roundabout way of asking about putting in the miles for running, but apologies. But putting in those, thinking about those questions can kind of set up your day. And what I generally do is that sets up my morning. By taking that extra hour in the morning, sets up my day. So it works as a foundation pillar for self-discipline, which brings me on to the point of running. The reason I run is because I hate to fucking run. I fucking hate it. Like, from every step, I joke with my friend Tom Otten, who's a super successful entrepreneur, runs a digital marketing agency in Dubai. He's an ultra runner. He was on the podcast a few months ago, one of my favorite ones. And he jokes with me because he loves to run. It's his disconnect, it's his meditation. Dean Karnazes, who was one of the top ultra runners in the world, is the same. It's their meditation. I don't do it for that because I fucking hate it. I hate running. I love weightlifting. I have a bodybuilding background, strength and conditioning background from playing GAA for years. I enjoy cycling. I enjoy swimming. I love high intensity work, but I hate to run. But every time I run, and one of the reasons that I do it nearly every day, particularly every training day, is because you build up self-discipline and mental toughness by doing something you don't want to do. And I had this misconception for years when I would go to the gym, and I was one of those people that enjoyed the gym. I liked the gym. I liked the challenge. I liked the high intensity work, and it makes me feel good. The endorphin release always made me feel good. And I could look at people who didn't enjoy the gym, and I'm like, nah, you'll learn to love it. But running gave me a very empathetic view to the people, and you may be one of those people listening where you're like, fuck, I want to work out because I want to look better, but I actually don't like the gym. I don't like to work out. And you tend to fall into one of two brackets, the people that learn to love it and then love the burn, love the pain, or the people that do it because of the end result, because they want to look a certain way or be healthier. And running really allowed me to connect with those people because I fucking hate it. And if you're listening to this and you're one of those people that doesn't like to work out or train, I totally get it now. It's something that's really honed and developed over me for the last 2 years since I started running, or the last year and a half since I started running more. And how I motivate myself is I have a couple of disconnection strategies where I talk on podcasts, audiobooks, motivational YouTube videos that I listen to. But I motivate myself to put in the miles when I run because I know it makes me mentally stronger. I know it makes me more self-disciplined. And what that does is it makes everything else in my life easier. And when you live your life in a perpetual state of discomfort, and I don't mean like discomfort like, oh, fucking sitting on a bed of nails. Discomfort where you're mile bouts of doing things that you don't want to do, you reinforce that habit of leaning into things that make you uncomfortable or do. I'm not sure if you can hear the wind outside. My God, it's like torrential rain. But that's what that is if you're wondering what the background noise is. But doing the running allows you to build up that self-discipline, and it makes me mentally stronger as a result. And I use that as the motivation because it shows up in other areas of my life. When I don't want to sit down and write, and I know I have to write, and I enjoy writing, but it's something I find a lot more difficult than, say, a podcast, where I'm effectively just articulating my thoughts, and in some cases, it's therapy for me, particularly the episodes like How to Stop Caring What People Think About You, or the mental health episode, or a lot of the questions that are a lot more lifestyle-based. I'm thinking things out loud, and you can generally tell because some of the ideas I've never actually spoken out loud, and I just press record. I don't pre-prepare any questions. I literally have them written in front of me on my laptop, and that's it. That's the only prep work I do for podcasts. And I find that easier because it helps me. But writing I find difficult. And also other things that I find difficult, like leaning into all conversations that make me uncomfortable. So I had really bad issues with conflict avoidance. Again, some things that happened when I was in earlier life that made me very, very conflict avoidant, in terms of if I had to have a conversation with somebody, I would have do everything to avoid that conversation. And it normally manifested itself, I spoke about this in the fitness mindset, that it would be mountains would get made out of molehills, where I would let a small thing that somebody said or did build until it had taken over a whole fucking story and life in my own head. It's kind of like the analogy I like to use now, or the picture I like to use now, is it's like a baby dragon. Like when somebody says something to you, that baby dragon you could kind of like slay right there and then if you just nipped it while it was early. But every time and every day and every week and every month that you don't say something and don't do something, that fucker grows, and it gets way harder to slay it when it's fucking 50 feet tall. And that's kind of what happened to me for a long period of time, where I'd have a conversation. This is why I was so poor in relationships with people for so long, because if something bothered me or somebody made a comment towards me that questioned my character, which is ridiculous because all it was a projection and an image. Like everything that you put into every attachment you give, or every story you give to a situation or a comment that somebody aims at you, just your projection or your vision of the way the world is. Like when you can step back and realize that everything is an opinion and everything is a perspective, that your way you see the world is just through the lens that you have, it's through the experiences and biases that you have, that you've chosen to attach those words or that emotion to those feelings. Like I have trigger words, and I spoke about this recently, and it's actually, I wrote it in the first draft of the new book, that we all have trigger words. Words that trigger an emotion in us. And you have to ask yourself the question, why did that word land? I spoke about this in the random episode with Paul Dermody about the purple polar bear. That if somebody calls you a purple polar bear, you don't really say anything. You just look at somebody and go, what the fuck are they on about? Where when somebody calls you stupid, or somebody calls you fat, or somebody calls you ugly, and that resonates and lands, you got to ask yourself, why did that land? Why did that word trigger me? And I had those words. I have a couple of them that, you know, stupid is one of mine. It's something I've long came to terms with because of some emotional turmoil that I've had, some bullying that I had to deal with in earlier life, and certain trigger words that you realize that, oh, they're just my projection. I've chosen to attach this anger emotion that's came with that. And when you can disconnect yourself from the anger emotion and realize that, you know, that is just your experience and bias of a previous time, that it's not you, it's the experience that you had once upon a time when someone beat the shit out of you when you were 7 and called you stupid, fat, and ugly, and you realize that, okay, that's triggered because there's an emotional scar there from earlier in life, or there's an emotional scar from, you know, when your dad beat the shit out of you, or there's an emotional scar when somebody did something to you. And you have to choose to not let that dictate how you see situations right now, because then you're working out of emotion as opposed to rationality. And I spoke in the episode about better questions to ask yourself, that it's really important that you make decisions based out of rationality and not out of emotion. Because when you make decisions based out of emotion, you tend to make bad decisions. Because it's not you that's steering the ship. It's not you that's behind the wheel. It's like a fucking Jekyll and Hyde, that somebody else just takes over and you fucking go off in this crazy rant when somebody says something to you and you're like, no, fuck you. Then you think they're questioning your character, and they're not in a lot of cases. And then you have to calm down, and then half an hour later, you're like, oh, shit, you know, I totally overreacted there. And it's kind of like the analogy I like to do. It's like dropping a plate on the floor. When you're, it would be way easier to not drop the plate on the floor and have to pick up all the pieces than to just actually break it and then have to put it all together. And that's kind of how, when you act out of emotion, particularly anger and these stronger emotions, when you tell somebody to go fuck themselves and you tell somebody that, oh, who are you to question me? And you got to end up doing repair work and then putting all the pieces back together. And I love the Donald Trump quote that you can always tell somebody to go fuck themselves tomorrow. And I live my entire life by that, that if somebody has said something to me, either a trigger word or an email or a comment on my Instagram, and it sends a reaction in me for whatever projected insecurity that I have, I'm like, okay, cool, handle this tomorrow, sleep on it, see how you feel. If you still want to tell them to go fuck themselves tomorrow, tell them. And I've never done it. To be honest, it's never happened. Another thing that really helps me is Abraham Lincoln used to do what he called a hot letter. So Abraham Lincoln, former president of the US who freed the slaves, he used to do hot letters where if somebody annoyed him, he would write out a letter telling them exactly how they annoyed him and what they did, and then he would never post it. He used to put it into his drawer, and when he died, they found hundreds of these letters where he was lambasting and giving out to generals, but he never actually sent any of these letters. And I find that I do that with emails now, that if somebody's really irked me or somebody's really annoyed me or a comment has really bothered me, I'll write out my response and then I'll just save it in my notes and then come back to it the next day. And then I look at it and go, fuck, actually, that's probably not what the person meant at all. Or, wow, that says more about me than the words that they said. And you would never end up sending it. So that's another strategy that you can use. And as I said, pull it back to running now that, Jesus, this went off on one completely. So to pull it back for how to motivate yourself, it's leaning into the discomfort and seeing the things and doing the things that you know you have to do whether you want to do it or not. And the reason I sign up to running through the Arctic Circle or Ironman that I have next year is because I won't train otherwise. I won't run because I hate it so much. I have to set an end goal because otherwise I won't do it. I don't enjoy it enough, and as much as I enjoy the self-discipline that it gives me, I need to work towards an end goal that involves running or else I won't do it. And that's a take-home advice for anybody listening. If you're struggling for motivation, you have to either set a goal, target, or date, or manifest one in your own head that you work towards. Because otherwise, it's too easy to cheat on your diet. It's too easy to skip a workout. It's too easy to have those extra couple of drinks if you don't have a strong enough why, you don't have a strong enough pull. Like, push is great, and push might get you going, but you need something pulling you that's really going to be powerful. And that's how I do it. Because if I didn't set these targets and have to work for running 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle or training to get up my marathon time so I can run it at the end of an Ironman, I wouldn't run. I wouldn't have a strong enough desire and a strong enough reason to do it. So that's how I motivate myself. I also listen to YouTube motivational videos, generally the same ones on repeat, David Goggins, Dean Karnazes, different motivational ones from Eric Thomas. And I listen to those, or I listen to a podcast, or I listen to an audiobook. And that will get me through. It kind of just, particularly the longer runs, 20 kilometers plus, where I'm running for several hours, I tend to find that works quite well. I save podcasts, particularly podcasts that I find easy to digest. So it's one like Rhonda Patrick that Found My Fitness, which is a great podcast on health, but very difficult to digest because of the words and terminology used. I don't listen to that on a run because it's too difficult to understand, because I'm like, shit, what the fuck did she say? What was that word? Where I'll listen to Joe Rogan, or I'll listen to Tim Ferriss if he's got like somebody that's easy to listen to, because it's, you're able to do two things. My podcast might fall into that category for you. You may listen to this when you run, particularly if you're either a strong runner or you have a heavy background in the things that I talk about. Whereas if you're completely new to fitness, you probably don't want to be running or doing something physical, too physical, while you're listening if you're trying to absorb the information. So that's kind of how I approach it. Not saying that's right or wrong, but it's what I do. So as a non-runner, that's how I motivate myself. And everything in between. So next question. Did you spend large amounts of time reading about fitness, the body, mindset, etc.? You're very knowledgeable and I wondered how you did it. Coleman Power Organic Fitness on Instagram. So similar to the self-discipline that I talked about earlier, everything that I know and have acquired, I've learnt. But to give it one more level of nearly deepness in the, to try and provide as much value as I can, it also overlapped with the things that I'm good at, the things that I'm interested in, and the things that I like. And one of the reasons that I'm able to absorb, and when I say absorb, I mean in the traditional sense that I can read a lot of books on fitness, mindset, health, self-help, personal development, and absorb the information, because one, it's my area of interest. It's what I'm really interested in and always have been. I've tried reading books on cryptocurrency. I've tried reading books on market economic theories, and I struggle with them. Even though I do read them because I like having a baseline information on anything that I'm going to invest on or anything that I'm particularly considering getting involved in. And again, I'm not saying to don't invest in cryptocurrency, don't, you know, do your own due diligence on whatever you do. I actually pulled out a lot of my portion of my portfolio from that, but after having done the research. But for me, they're things that I learned because I wanted to have some more base knowledge in. I don't absorb them very easily. That's why it's outside of my circle of competence and I never talk about them, or else I don't offer strict advice on them because I'm not an expert in it. I'm not the best person for the fields because I don't absorb it as easily. Whereas I can read 3 or 4 nutrition books in a week, and I have done so, particularly if I get very obsessed on a topic. And I'm fortunate that I have that personality trait. I get very, very obsessed on things. If you haven't noticed when you listen to the podcast, if like I start running, I'm like, right, fuck it, I'm running every day. And I can do the same thing with books. Now, I probably only read about 4 books up until the age of 24, and they were sports autobiographies. But I started to consume a lot of information, because when you realize that you're cutting your learning curve by learning from other people's mistakes, it makes it a lot easier to invest your time and developing hacks in your life that allow you to consume more information that support you and move you forward. So in a lot of my spare time, I'm normally consuming an audiobook or a podcast. Like one of the things that I regularly say, and I mentioned this in the Daily Fit Tip, which is a 3-minute-a-day tip that you can apply for fitness or mindset. It's on iTunes and it's on Alexa Skill and Google Home as a voice-activated app. And one of the things I spoke about is turn your car into a library on wheels. And I do that religiously. I intentionally drive 2 hours every day. So I drive to the gym, which is an hour to and an hour from my house. I have a gym in my house, so I don't need to. But I factor it in because that hour to and from allows me to consume information that moves my life forward. I break my life into 4 quadrants: health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. And normally the podcast or audiobook I'm consuming is trying to move the needle forward in one of those quadrants. Generally, right now, I listen to a business podcast going into the gym in the morning, and I listen to a health or fitness book on the way out, primarily because they're the focus right now, because of the amount of consultations I'm doing with people in business, working with mentorships and working with personal trainers, and the amount of people that are coming through my BKF online, my GA Lean Body programs. It allows me to move that needle forward in terms of helping more people, providing more value, and improving my own knowledge on the things that interest me. So I build it into my day, because what gets measured gets managed, or what gets managed gets measured. And you need to prioritize consuming information that moves you forward in whatever it is that you're in, that you are prioritizing to do right now. But it also needs to overlap what you're interested in. And one of my mentors used to tell me that you'll be successful in whatever you do if you can find the things that you find easy that other people find hard. And that's how I feel about fitness. It's how I feel about nutrition. It's how I feel about mindset. Those things that I read, I consume them and remember them very easily. For as long as I can remember, I did home economics in school. It was my best grade, that and biology. And they were the subjects that I did very well in. I did terrible in school, but I did very well in the subjects that I did well in, and then failed everything else. And they were the ones I was interested in. So for as long as I can remember, nutrition, food, the body was always an interest to me. So I can consume that information and retain it very easily. And it's advice I'd offer to anybody when they're looking to find out what they should do or provide whatever passion that they have, to follow that by asking yourself that question: what would you do for free? What do you spend your free time talking about? What do you spend your free time thinking about? That's the thing you should do. And particularly if it's something that can provide value to other people. Sometimes it's not. But in 2018, coming into 2019, if you're passionate about fucking cookies, you can do a podcast on the best types of cookies in the world. If you're passionate about celebrity gossip, you can start writing columns or a blog. Like, you can literally make money doing nearly anything right now if you have a blueprint on how to do it, and you learn how to connect with an audience, and you learn how to provide value to people. And I'm just fortunate that I'm in an age that my knowledge overlaps with what people want to hear to a degree. If you're listening to this, you're probably in that bracket, and it's my interest and my higher purpose is to try and provide value to as many people as I can, make the world a little bit better because I was here. And I learned all that, with the exception of a couple of things that I find easier to retain than others. It was just practically putting steps in place that moved everything forward. So I've spoken about this in previous podcasts. So when I first found audiobooks, that was my introduction, because I wasn't a great reader. And even though I've got better and I've read hundreds of books over the last few years, audiobooks were my introduction, because I was, again, working as a primary school teacher, I understood that people had different learning styles, you know, audio, kinesthetic, visual, and I'm very much an audio learner. I'll retain way more information from listening. It's why I connect so well with podcasts. It's why I do so well with audiobooks, as opposed to physical books where my attention can sway. And I have to do shorter bouts of reading in time concentrated windows when I'm physically reading, because I lose concentration. But that doesn't really happen with an audiobook. I tend to retain a lot more of it. So I started listening to audiobooks when I was 24, 25. And they started to change the way I saw everything. And the more you connect with fitness, your body, mindset, or whatever is important to you, when you know what your North Star is, to take it back even further, when you know what you're trying to achieve, it's a lot easier to consume the information that helps to get you there. And I've spoken on this in the podcast in the past, that if you don't know what you want, you'll take whatever you get. And probably the single most important thing to get what you want is to know what you want. Because if you don't know what you want, it doesn't matter how fast you go. It doesn't matter how hard you work. Like, if you don't know where you want to go, fucking difference does it make what speed you go? What difference does it make how hard you work? Whereas when you know what the end goal is, you know what your North Star is, you can start consuming information that moves you forward. So when you're trying to look a certain way or get your body composition a certain way, you need to know what that looks like. And I'm big on visualization. If you can see it in your mind, you can hold it in your hand. It's providing you do the work and your actions map to your ambition. But you need to know what that end goal is. If you want to be in a relationship with a loving partner, you need to know what that looks like. You need to be able to hold that vision in your mind, because if that came into your life and you didn't know what you wanted, it would pass right through you. Opportunities pass. And when you realize that, when you get clarity, before you can achieve anything, you got to get fucking clear on what it is. Because if you're not clear, it may pass in front of you and you fucking miss it. And I see it all the time with people where they're like, oh shit, I fucking missed Instagram. If I'd only done Instagram at the beginning, I'd be huge now and I'd have a load of money. It's like, but there's other things. There's fucking podcasts. There's Alexa skills. All these other things are coming now. And if you know what you want to build a business that provides and serves more value to people, you need to start looking out for the next thing, or what's popular now. Where is the attention now? Where can you get your message now that can help move the world forward or help move your audience forward? You need to know what you want, because when you do that, there's an old Buddhist proverb that the teacher will appear when the student is ready. And to bring that into more modern scientific terms, I've spoken about this, the reticular activation system. It's like your brain's internal GPS. It's what tells your brain what to focus on. It's like the analogy or the example I use is, if you walk into a room and there's 50 people in the room and you see someone with the same dress as you or the same t-shirt as you, it's the first thing you notice, because you have that same one and you're hanging in your wardrobe at home. You block, and there's all this other fucking stimulus. There's noise, there's pictures, there's other people with different clothes on, but you focus in and zoom in on the one thing that you have in your wardrobe at home. That's the power of focus and the power of your reticular activation system. It's the cognitive neuroscience that supports the law of attraction and following, and the power of intention, where you're, what you focus on expands. And the cognitive neuroscience is catching up with these ancient philosophies that have been around for years. And but you need to fucking know what that is, because if you want to be in an amazing relationship and you know what your non-negotiables are. I need someone I can trust, someone I'm attracted to, someone that supports me and moves me forward and makes me think more. If that person comes into your life, you might be able to recognize it. If you want to look a certain way and lose body fat or build muscle, and you know that, fuck, I need to add a little bit of size, or I want to drop a couple of dress sizes and look a little bit leaner and improve my energy levels and improve my sleep. If you know what that is, you'll start seeing the trainers or the people that are doing that right now that could potentially help you move it forward. But you gotta get clear, because clarity precedes mastery. You can't be a master in anything until you get fucking clear on what it is. So what I would advise is understand that, using myself as an example, everything I have, I fucking learned. And the reason that the follow-up to the fitness mindset, and this book is my passion project. The GEA book is, again, out before Christmas, very much to serve my GEA community, sports nutrition, training, how to train, how to eat. This third book is a real passion project for mine, because it's fleshing out the mindset section of the fitness mindset, and it's talking about all these things that I had problems with, that I had issues with and came out the other side, because I fucking learned it. And all I'm doing now is trying to pass the message back to people. A lot of the book I'm writing to my 22-year-old self, 23-year-old self, 25-year-old self, because I was getting in my own way. I was letting the biggest enemy live between my two fucking ears, and I was in my own way and letting self-sabotage and letting fear and letting all these things, opinions of others, dictate my direction and dictate decisions that I made, when it's not about that. It's about getting clear on what you want, blocking out the fucking noise and getting very clear on what the signal is, blocking out the opinions and getting clear on what you want, blocking out everybody else and getting clear on what makes you happy. Because when you do that, you can start focusing on it, and what you focus on will expand. And if you don't think that that's true, your life is a manifestation of every action you've taken, which is a manifestation of the thoughts that you've had in your head up to this point. You've created it, because the actions you've taken are a result of the thoughts that you've had. You need to go back and control those thoughts and the images you put into your head. It's like planting orange seeds and expecting fucking apples to grow. Don't put negative shit into your mind, following negative people, following garbage fucking information, and expect to have an incredible life. Don't plant apple seeds and expect oranges to grow. You have to consume the right information. You have to surround yourself with the right people. It's why your average of five people is so important. Get a mentor. Buy the books. Go to seminars. Surround yourself with the right people. Do whatever you have to do. But just make sure that it moves you forward. Because what you planned in your mind, what thoughts you have, will lead to the actions you take, and the actions you take will dictate where your life goes. Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. If you're consuming the right information, if you're reading the right books, if you're listening to the right podcasts, if you're surrounding yourself with the right people, or consciously trying to surround yourself with people who make you think bigger or think more in line with what you're trying to do, everything will move forward. And I'm speaking as someone who's out the other side to the large part. I have an incredible inner circle by design, because I cut the people that were backhandedly trying to pull me back, that didn't support my decision, the one I did. Or I cut the words they wait in the case of family members, that they can have their opinions on what I do and it washes straight over me because their opinions carry no weight. When you get very clear on what you want and where you want to go and who you want to be, you start drowning out the noise of all those people who are naysaying and hating and telling you can't do it. And even better, if you can really get fucking strong, you can use that as fuel for your fire, because that's powerful. When you're doing something that you don't want to do and you can think of those negative words that someone aimed and threw in your direction, you can use that fuel. Anytime for fucking 18 months when I was getting up at 5 a.m., I didn't want to get up. I remember the fucking pricks who told me I couldn't do it, who told me I was a loser, who told me I was stupid, who told me that I'd never achieve anything. I remembered those fucking words, and I set the alarm and I got up and I used it, because when you use that fuel for fire, it can move you forward. But only after a certain point. You have to get clear first, because otherwise it's too easy to let that become your thoughts and let that become your reality and let those opinions dictate what you do, because the fire consumes you. And fire is an incredible thing. It can light up your whole house or it can burn the fucking thing down. You got to be able to control it and use it as you need to. And that would be my advice on learning anything, getting more knowledgeable on what you want to do. Find the people who have done it. Go to their seminars, read their books, buy their mentorship, spend an hour with them. Do whatever you got to do. Doesn't matter what it is. You may want to be the top makeup artist or hair designer. You may want to be an incredible personal trainer. You may want to be an online coach. You may want to be a professional bodybuilder or physique competitor or bikini girl. Whatever your goal is, find the people that have done it and then go find out how they did it or work with them so they can move you forward and cut your learning curve. Sometimes it's in books. Sometimes it's in podcasts. Sometimes it's one-to-one. Doesn't matter how you get there, but when you make the decision and you realize that mastery precedes clarity and you start working towards that, your teacher will appear. You'll start to see those people. You'll start to see those books. You'll start to see that dress or t-shirt that you have in your wardrobe everywhere you fucking go, because those books will pop out. Those podcasts will jump out at you on the iTunes or Stitcher screen and you'll be like, oh, that really will land and resonate with me today. That's how you do it. It's all learned. Like, everybody that's done it has learned how to do it. There's no fucking secret. There's no sit there and dream and wish it comes and not do anything and it happens. It's not how it works. It's getting clear on what you want and realizing that everything that you need to get there will manifest and will come clear in front of your vision and come clear in front of you if you've made the decision. Your body, your job, your relationships, everything. How you do anything, it's how you do everything. Okay, next question. Hey, Brian, I listened to your podcast on how to deal with negative people. Before I say anything else, it was amazing. However, I have one huge issue. I think I'm the negative person to myself. Help, I encourage other people and have amazing people in my life who encourage me, but I drag myself down. I think the worst of every situation. So what to do if the negative voice inside your head? A podcast and this would be great. So this one comes in from Anonymous, and I'll try and link that episode in the show notes, how to deal with negative people. It was a very popular episode, got a lot of downloads. And this actually came in from more than one person. It was worded differently, but this actually came in from more than one person, that what do I do when I'm the negative person? And I mentioned a quote earlier that may have washed over because I ran through it in the context of a sentence, but there's something I live by, which is, don't let your biggest enemy live between your two ears. It's a quote from Buddha. And that's what can happen in a lot of cases when you're the negative person and you're getting in your own way. And I understand this better than anybody, because I was chronically bad at self-sabotaging. And I've gone significantly better with it, but I have to stay on top of it nearly daily. I like to think of self-sabotage a little bit like sweeping the floor, similar to mental health, that you can do it today, but if you don't stay on top of it, the floor gets dirty again tomorrow. So you got to do it daily. And one of the reasons that the self-discipline that I do, getting up early, running every day, is largely down to leaning into uncomfortable situations, which helps me deal with issues with self-sabotage. Because I know a lot of people have issues with this, and again, I can't put words in other people's mouths, but I was so bad at it. Like, I used to self-sabotage in fucking nearly everything that I did, where I would get really lean and get in really good shape, and then I'd binge for 3 or 4 days until I was back to square one. I would do really, really well on the first 2 or 3 dates when I would see a new girl, and then I would start getting either irrationally jealous, and then I started to deal with that, and then I got irrationally detached, where I just wouldn't message them back at all. And I was self-sabotaging so many things. I did the same thing in fitness. When I tried to get my business off the ground first, when I used to get money, and the weeks and months that I was doing well, I used to spend the whole thing, not ever saving for a rainy day, for thinking that, you know what, if I actually put some money aside now, if I do have a quiet month, at least I'm not going to go out of business. That's what the reason I went out of business 3 times and went broke twice. And it was one of those cases of that self-sabotage. And you can only get punched in the face so often before you realize, why the fuck is my nose sore? And that's what kept happening. It just kept showing up. And one of the philosophies that you probably heard me mention 100 times if you listen to the podcast regularly is, how you do anything is how you do everything. And that was born out of self-sabotage for me, because I would be able to identify the area of my life I was self-sabotaging in, and then I'd look over to another area across the pond and be like, fuck, I do it there too. And then I'd look into relationships or job and I'm like, fuck, I do it there too. And the same worked in reverse when I started to get positive with it. When I stopped self-sabotaging in one area, I was able to stop doing it in all areas. And understanding first that to identify any problem is the start of a solution. That when you have your head buried in the sand, that's when there's a real problem. And I see it with people all the time. And I call it ostrich head in the sand syndrome. It's where there's clearly something wrong going on and they're choosing to ignore it. You see it all the time with people that are in a relationship where they're miserable in a relationship and the boyfriend or girlfriend is cheating, or they're really disconnected or detached. And everybody around it in the circle knows that, oh shit, John or Sean or Joan or Mary are cheating on them, but they don't see it. And it's so blatantly obvious, but they buried their head in the sand and they've ignored it. And they put up the beautiful photo on Instagram, or they put up the lovely post on Facebook, and their head is buried in the sand and they're avoiding the situation. People do it in their jobs when they have to have a conflict talk with their boss. And instead of actually going to their boss and asking for a raise or asking for promotion or asking for more responsibility or less responsibility because they're overworked, they just let their job suffer and they start to do it a little bit more half-assed. And that's a form of self-sabotage. People do it in the gym, where they're working really, really hard, they're training, you're eating well, and then you'll see somebody else that is further along than you or looks better than you, or in your opinion and your perception is that they look better than you, and then you go, oh, fuck it, I'll never look like them, and you self-sabotage yourself. It shows up in so many different ways for people. And I had this problem for so long, and I have a full section, there'll be a full section in the new book on it, because at the root of every issue normally comes down to either a lack of purpose or visualization on what you want, so getting really clear on the end goal, or self-sabotage or a lack of discipline to actually do it. And the reason I wanted to answer this question in this podcast is that it ties together with what I've spoken about earlier, that you're getting positive and becoming less negative and holding yourself back and not letting your own enemy live between your 2 ears is practiced and it's learned, and it comes from building up self-discipline, and it comes from consuming the right information, and it comes from planting the right seeds. And I spoke earlier that don't plant orange seeds and expect apple trees to grow. That don't plant negative thoughts in your head and constantly be telling yourself you're not good enough, or you're not worthy enough, or you're not pretty enough, or you're not whatever, lean enough, big enough, whatever, insert insecurity here. I've fucking dealt with all of them. And I still have them. When it's a daily, you're constantly staying on top of it. It's just that they change and they become less intensive over time. And that negative voice, you realize that that negative voice is a choice, that you're choosing to let it guide you. You're choosing to let it take over the wheel of the ship or the wheel of the car, and you're letting that negative voice drive you. And in order to work and get away from that, assuming that you have the right people, which you said you have, or you've got good people in your life, and assuming that you're listening to podcasts or audiobooks, or you're consuming information that is making you see things in a more positive light, a lot of issues with negativity in your own mind comes from either an insecurity or a lack of self-confidence in yourself. And similar to self-discipline, you build self-confidence by doing things you didn't think you could do, and then adding a leg to your confidence table every time you do. So the analogy I like to use for confidence is like a table, like legs on a table. If you have a table that's got two legs, it's a little bit wobbly and you can probably turn it over pretty easily. Confidence is the same. If you haven't done a lot of things where you've built up confidence in your life and you've got that little bit of a wobbly table, it's easy to knock you. And every time you get knocked, it makes the table weaker because you got to pick it up again. But every time you do something that you didn't think you could do, you add another leg to that confidence table. And when you do that consistently over time, you get a really strong table, and it takes a lot to knock it. And the way you do that is by attacking things that you're afraid of, and attacking things and setting goals and then hitting those goals. And the reason I love fitness so much, and I am a fitness guy, it's again, Brian Keane Fitness is in my title and a lot of my social media platforms, but I'm also a life person because fitness is just a metaphor for life. The reason fitness works so well at building confidence for people, and sometimes we look at fitness and think, yeah, well, if you lose weight or you build muscle or you look leaner and feel more confident, you know, that comes down to the way that you look. That's generally not the case. It's not my experience when I used to work one-to-one as a trainer, and it's not my experience when I work online as a coach. What normally happens with people is when they're setting these small goals and small targets and you're hitting them, you're building those legs onto the table. When you're stepping on a treadmill and you can't run half a kilometer, and then 2 weeks later you can run a kilometer, and then 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, you can run 2 kilometers. You're building confidence because you're setting these small incremental goals and you're working towards them. When you go into the gym for the first time and you can only bench or squat the bar, and then 2 weeks later you're able to add 2.5 kilos on it, and then 6 weeks later you're adding 15 kilos on it, you're building confidence and you're adding legs to that confidence table. That's what fitness does. It's generally not the A and B that we see. We can see a before and after and think, oh yeah, no wonder they're confident now. They've gone from looking like this to looking like that. That's generally not what happens. It's because they've set these small goals along the way, and the person that they had to become to go from A to B is what has given them the confidence and made them transform the way that they see things. And fitness is very, very effective for that. And it doesn't matter where you get that confidence from. It comes from setting a goal and then hitting it. And for me, I'll use a couple of examples because you're your own best example. My first one that really worked as the catalyst for me was bodybuilding, was competing as a fitness model on stage, because I did my first show at 26, so nearly 5 years ago. And I remember growing up, I used to look at Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I used to look at, and you may not be into bodybuilding at all, but this is my reference point, and you may have an equivalent for, you know, marathon runners or triathletes or whatever, insert sport here. And I used to look at Arnold Schwarzenegger and different bodybuilders and different fitness people, and I never really thought that I could do it. I always thought, wow, that's incredible to look that big and that lean, but I don't think I could do that. And when I decided I was going to do my first show, which was at 26, which gives you a very, very, it gives you the time scale and period that up until that point, I did nothing before the age of 26, apart from get a couple of degrees because of my fear and self-sabotage. And I was good at school. Like, I was good with college and university. Like, my ability to retain information is pretty good. And I was able to succeed in that, but it never pushed me. And bodybuilding and competing pushed me because it was something I was afraid of. And they say that behind every fear is a person you want to be. And on the other side of fear is freedom. And that's how the show was. I had to use every strategy to not pull out of that show. I had to put my affirmations on the board. I didn't realize they were called affirmations at the time, but I was putting up things like, I will step on stage at this level of body fat at this weight. And I was putting those up where I could see them every morning and see them before I go to bed. I actually still have this on my whiteboards where I set my goals. I normally write them in the first person as if I've already achieved them, and then I just wait for reality to catch up. And I was doing that. I was doing visualization. So when I was doing my cardio, I was picturing my positions and my poses and rehearsing them over and over again in my own head. And then I used like different distraction techniques as I got closer, where I would watch movies and I would just try and disconnect and not think about it when it wasn't important. I live by the acronym that is from a famous sports coach. I can't remember his name right now, but he coached the LA Lakers to several championships, and he has an acronym called WIN, which is what's important now. And I still use this to this day when I get nervous before I do a speech, and I still get butterflies in my stomach before I speak. And I ask myself, what's important now? Because it's very easy to get out of your head and start focusing on all these other things because you're feeling scared or you're feeling fearful, where you're like, okay, what's important now? It's important to go out there and speak the best of your ability, slow down, articulate your words, and try and provide value to the audience or to the corporation that you're speaking at. And that was what I had to do when I started competing first. And the reason I connected so strongly with Marathon de Sable, the 6 back-to-back marathons in the Sahara Desert, was because all those same fears came back up just in another way, which again highlights how you do anything is how you do everything, because I was terrified. I put a section in the book on the notes I wrote in my phone before I flew out to the Sahara, my self-talk. And it was fearful, like very, very scared, because I was terrified. I was having nightmares of snakes fucking weeks before I went out. I was going self-sufficient. I never ran more than a marathon. I'd only ran one marathon to prepare for it, and it was on road in Dubai. And I'd never done anything multi-day. I'd never been a good sleeper anyway, and I was going to sleep outside the desert for 8 days and then run six back-to-back marathons. I was fucking terrified. But the bigger the fear, the bigger the confidence that comes off the back of it. Because I came back from Marathon de Sable, and if you listen to the episode, 156, I think it is, if you've listened to the episode, I speak very differently when I came back, because I felt like I could do anything, and I still feel like that, because that residue continues on and you feel unstoppable. You come back and you think you can conquer the fucking world, and that's what happened. And the only reason I got that was because I didn't know if I could do it. The reason I signed up to Marathon de Sable was because I wasn't sure if I could do it. I'd never ran more than 10 kilometers. I had never been enjoyed running. I still don't. And I didn't know if I could do a multi-day event in the desert where there was fucking snakes and it was self-sufficient. I had to carry my own food. And I wasn't sure if I could do it. And that's why I signed up, because I'm like, fucking, I'm preaching to people, you know, to attack their fears and go after these things. And then I'm like, I gotta fucking do this, because one of the reasons that, again, not speaking for anybody else, but you'll see people that tell you to do things and then they don't attack their own demons. And I get that, because it's a lot easier to tell somebody to do something than to actually go and do the work. And it comes back to what Coleman asked earlier about that I'm being knowledgeable and how I did it, learning about fitness, the body and mindset. It's one thing to know something, but you got to go and apply it then. Knowing and not doing is the same as not knowing. And the reason I'm able to help people, and that's what it's all about at the end of the day, because the service you provide others is the greatest currency in the universe. And when you lose yourself in the service of others, all the fulfillment comes from the other side. And all I'm doing is living my journey and doing my thing, trying to make myself stronger and then pass that message back to people, because people have inspired me that have done their thing. But you got to apply that information and knowledge that you have. Like, to talk about self-sabotage and talk about fear and attacking those fears, if I'm not doing it, I'm not the person to tell you to fucking do it. And you'll see people that will tell you to go do this, go do that, and then they don't do it themselves or apply it themselves. And that's cool. Each person, go do them. But that's how you get more confident, is learning what you need to do and then going and doing it. And my advice for anybody that's struggling as their own enemy in between their two ears, and they're struggling for confidence, they're struggling with stories they've told themselves about not being good enough, not being worthy enough, not being pretty enough, whatever it is. Firstly, realize it's an opinion, because that's an opinion that you have of yourself. It's not a fact. And it's a perspective of your experiences and your biases up to this point, that everything that you've experienced through your childhood, through your life, through your adult life, all these things, your bad relationships, your bad jobs, your bad experiences with diets, they're experiences that you've had and you formed opinions off the back of them. They may not be facts. And when you confuse facts and opinions, that gets very dangerous, because an opinion is you're not good enough and you can't run a marathon. That's not a fucking fact. That's an opinion. You have an opinion on what you can't and can't do. You have a limitation on what you can't and can't do. That's your opinion. That's somebody else's perspective. That's not a fucking fact. It's a story you've told yourself and a limitation that you've created. Confidence is the same. You've told yourself so often, and if there's an old Chinese proverb that if you lie down with dogs, you'll get fleas. And I like to think of thoughts very, very similar. If you tell yourself long enough and strongly enough that you can't do something, that becomes your default automatic system one thinking. And you think that you can't do it. Daniel Kahneman talks in his book, Thinking Fast and Slow. We have our system one, which is our automatic, I can't do something thought. Our system two is our reflective. We step back and analyze the whole situation and then make a decision. A little bit like emotional versus rational. And your system one, if you constantly set goals or targets and then you just quit and don't do them because you don't have the discipline that I spoke about earlier that you can build, then that becomes the story that gets reinforced. It's like a bad movie that just plays over and over again, where when you change that story, you change the entire script and you change the ending of the movie, but you have to go back and do that. You got to put the cutscenes in by developing the self-discipline, and you can learn that. But understanding that if you don't have confidence, it comes from reinforced negative stories and limitations that you've constantly told yourself over time. To build it, you do the opposite. You need to set goals, small at first and then bigger as you get along. Don't compare yourself to other people. Don't listen to the likes of me who's trying to run through the Arctic Circle, because that's my chapter 50. My chapter one was, right, can I start my own business? My chapter one was, right, can I sign up, have the courage and spend the money to sign up for a bodybuilding show? And I built it from there. Start small. Aim big, but start small. And when you start doing that gradually over time, you build the confidence and you start to get out of your own way. And every time you do it, think of it like legs for a table. That table gets stronger. That table gets sturdier. And it gets to the point where nobody can move it, because that's what happens after a certain point. There's a reason that I try and interview some of the most successful people that I know on the podcast. You're Ross Edgley, who's swimming around the fucking UK at the minute. And successful people in their area of expertise in bodybuilding or business or relationships or whatever area of life they're successful in, it's because they've so many legs on their table. You can't knock them. You can have those negative comments. You can have people tell you you can't do it. And it doesn't affect you because it's not the signal. It's drowning out the noise. You're tuning out the folly. You're tuning out the all those opinions and perspectives that other people have of what you should do, because you're focused on what you need to achieve. You know what you have that clarity on. This is the goal. I need to put small steps in place in order to hit it. I need to build this confidence and add more legs to these tables. And then you get out of your own head. The compound effect kicks in then. The compound effect is like a snowball. It's where it starts small and then compounds over time. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger and easier and easier and easier. It's why the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. You compound that effect over time. People that are fit get fitter, people that are lean get leaner, and you compound what you do. But it starts with making a decision. It starts with identifying the problem that is your own enemy living between your two ears and realizing that in order to build confidence, you need to build self-discipline that helps you do that. Go back and check question one. Build up that muscle, then set those small goals. Get very clear on those goals and then work towards them daily, because that's how you get out of your own head. That's how you achieve whatever you want to achieve. It's completely relative. You may want to be the best mum or dad you can be. You may want to drop a couple of dress sizes. You may just want to feel a little bit smarter in conversation because you've read more books and can give your opinion on certain topics without mindlessly just draining back from a conversation and wondering what people are talking about, which is what used to happen to me in conversation. I'm like, shit, I know nothing about that topic. And that may be whatever it is for you. Determine what it is, because when you know what the end target is and you know what the end goal is, you can work backwards from it. And that's what I would advise. Do that. Add legs to your table. Build a self-confidence. Get out of your own way. Build a self-discipline by realizing it's a muscle, and then work towards it every day. Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. So a lot of overlap on today's episode. I actually should really do a separate introduction. I'm definitely not going to do a separate introduction, because even though these three questions were really, really different, there's so much overlap with them. And I think it's more probably where my mindset is at today, that I was able to jump back and forth with them. And I think I'm very heavy into the mindset element of the book right now. And that's where, again, your reticular activation system kicking in, that it's making things very, very relative. But how you run, how you train, how you eat, how you live, how you do life, all kind of comes down to the same basic principles of getting out of your own way and trying to achieve whatever you want to achieve. So hopefully you enjoyed it. It's the first Q&A in ages, just because of all the awesome guests that I've had on. So hopefully you enjoyed it. Hit me up on Instagram DM. Let me know what you thought. Tag it in your stories. I love that when that happens. And leave a review. If you found value in it, all I ever ask is you leave a review or you tag it or tell your friends about it, which is even better. I love that when people are like, oh, so-and-so recommended the podcast. So glad they did. I fucking love that. It like makes my day every time. So thank you for listening. Hope you got a lot of value. Hope you enjoyed. Catch you all next week. Quick message before you head off. Just letting you know my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on Audible and all major audiobook apps. If you're like me and love listening to books while you travel or work out, be sure to go to audible.co.uk or audible.com to check out the audio version of The Fitness Mindset. You can listen to a 3-minute sample on there, or you can download the full book. Also, last thing before you leave, if you try Clean Cut Meals, the sponsors of today's episode, be sure to enter the code BKF at the checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Clean Cut Meals are doing all my food for my next adventure challenge coming early next year. I'll be announcing more about that during next month's podcast, and I'm just waiting on medical clearance. Ugh, yikes. So stay tuned for that, and remember, code BKF at the checkout for 20% off your first order. Catch you all next week.